House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday, February 17th. With us are Representative Tilton, Representative Hughes, Representative Josephson, Representative Keto, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones, all three of you, or put them on vibrate. We have one bill on the calendar today, House Bill 268, ADA, Dividend to State Income Valuation. With us today, we have Michael Lamb, CFO of ADA, and Gene Terrio from ADA. Do you both want to come to the table? Or do you want to do it one at a time? Or and for the record, we have both of them at the table. And please state your name and affiliation for the record. And you got us for about an hour and a half.
Mr. Chairman, Gene Terrio with ADA. Michael Lamb is the CFO of ADA. He'll be carrying most of the presentation. John Springsteen, who is the executive director, should be online soon. And Deputy Commissioner Fred Paradis, who is a member of the ADA board on behalf of the administration, may be joining us also.
He's not on yet, but I'll let you know when he comes on.
So. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You don't need my name again, correct?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, name
well, thank you. Michael Lamb, Chief Financial Officer, Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority.
Please continue.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, committee members, I want to start by saying thank you because I've spent time with most of you on this. And Sue, this is a little bit more expanded, a little bit of animation. I want to spend enough time that you feel like you understand it, but I don't want to spend any more time than you need, and especially since most people don't like talking about accounting. And so I'll try to pace myself, and if everything's good, you can speed me up or slow me down. Is that fair?
Yeah, certainly.
Fair? Perfect. Thank you so much. So this is really, as in the bottom corner, proposed changes to the dividend statute, both HB 268, Senate Bill 149. And this cover slide is really to talk about really what I intend to cover, which is the dividend history, which sort of have gone through most of you, the goal, the statutory language, and two problems that have come up. And it comes up, I was talking to Gene earlier today about how these things come about, and it really comes about as part of the annual audit. There's a letter of representation that's made that's signed by the chief financial officer, by the controller. I always call it the get-out-of-jail-free card for the auditors. If there's an audit failure, they go to the letter of representation that says, you told us. And so in the last 2 years, we've ended up having these discussions that sort of have led to us bringing forth this language. So I wanted to give you a little bit more background of why we thought there's two problems, why we thought we should fix them. So the history, and we've talked a little bit about this, and I've showed this to you, and maybe just expand slightly that, and I forget who I have said what to. But the dividend program really is a three-year, covers 3 years. And on here you can see there's two columns. June 30, 1995 is the very first year. That's the first year of actual results of operations, income statement, if you will, that the dividend's based on. So the first year is the year that's in that column, which is what happened. The middle, the next year would be, in this instance, 1996, is when the auditors come in, they actually perform the audit. The audit gets completed. The staff makes a recommendation to the board on the dividend. The dividend gets declared. And then in the third year, in this instance, the very first one would be 1997, a dividend was declared of $15 million.
Excuse me for a minute. I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ledoux. Sorry about that. Please continue.
No, thank you so much. So over this time period, lease to date, and the expectation, quite frankly, is this is what it is to date, but ADA's intention is that this schedule continue. And we paid about $380 million to the state, or ADA has. I shouldn't say we because it certainly hasn't been me. But ADA has paid about $380 million. And often asked is the question of, well, how much state capitalization was made? And here's the two numbers, 189, 143. So about $332 million. So in essence, all of that has been paid back. And this slide kind of is a nice to get to the the goal. ADA really intends and wants to share. The statutes require that we share the dividend. But what I've put in the italicized is what we're trying to do is basically stabilize and, to the extent possible, make more predictable the dividend amount that would come to the state and really get it to the point that the dividend's based on the actual financial results, not on market value adjustments and other things. So that's kind of the goal. The pertinent language, this is out of 44-88-088. I just stripped most everything out to basically, as you can see, the authority shall pay a dividend. The dividend has to be a, and sorry, slide 5, too. Thank you. I wrote myself a note. I will do better. So, slide 5, the minimum of 25%, maximum 50% of that net income, which is a statutorily defined term. And in the third little group of data here, net income means the change in net position or whatever the equivalent term is, and over time that the name gets changed. Some of us used to call statement of operations, net income. Now it's statement of changes in net position. But the statutory net income number is, as it says here, are the equivalent under generally accepted accounting principles, GAAP, as set out in audited financial statements. So the statutory language is very clear. You have to do, ADA has to do a GAAP-based audited financial statement that net income number then gets used in the dividend calculations. And then there are these exclusions down here. So, and I talked about this, and from the first trip that Gene and I made down here and thinking about what I could have done better trying to explain is I changed this slide a little bit, and I'm on slide 6, ma'am, that this is a dividend calculation stack, and the dividend to the state is based upon the statutorily defined net income number, which we just talked about, and I showed you where the language was at, which is based on, as I just showed you, the audited statement of revenue expenses, change in net position. And in order to be audited, of course, it has to include, GAAP says you have to include market value and or write-down entries, which then GASB drives GAAP, which drives that, which drives everything. And what I've inserted in here is the box in between the essentially what is the audited financial statement result, which goes to the board. The board accepts the financials, and then based upon that number, says, okay, use this number, and we're going to declare a dividend to the state. And so what HB 268 and Senate Bill 149 would do is in between that and that statutorily defined income is we take that audited number, and as I tried to add here is that it would remove market value adjustments and or write down or loss entries so that the result gets to be the statutorily defined net income would then not include any market value adjustments or state or federal funded write-downs to actually calculate the dividend, to really get to sort of what were ADA's actual operations. And the analogy, which I shared with some of you, I'm going to go through, kind of talks about these three things that are here in that audited financial statements, and same thing when you do the tax returns. There's really basically three types of transactions. There's real transactions that actually did happen. There was a meeting of the minds, and there was an exchange of cash, and you record that. The second type of an entry are estimates and allocations. We're all familiar with buying an asset, depreciating it, amortizing it over time. That the payables at the end of the year, receivables. So you stick that in there. The third type of a transaction, which is what we want to take out, are these market value adjustment entries that didn't really happen, but you're required to book them anyhow. So the first problem, I had mentioned there were two problems. First one.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Certainly.
Thank you. Mr. Lamb, I don't know about the other members, but I think I, at this point, really could use some hypotheticals or examples. So, for example, on number 3, where it says, these are entries related to transactions that didn't happen, you must record them as though they did, I don't really understand what any of that means.
Okay. So,
I think your example.
And just if I could clarify,
sure.
In my mind, that means that the Ambler Road was a transaction, but it didn't happen, and you have to record the Ambler Road. That's my context. So you really need to help me.
Okay. How about if I get to the analogy, and if that doesn't make sense, or if I haven't explained it, I will try again. Will that work for
sure.
you? Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
So, slide number 8. Thank you, Gene. So, I use actually Gatsby's thing. So, the first problem is to talk about the effect of market value entries, partially Representative Josephine, that you're asking about. So the first problem, and I try to define it before I do the analogy, is that, and I've mentioned, the dividend payment is ultimately, it's a cash-based transaction. In the end, in the third year, the ADA is to write a dividend check to the state, which they expect that it won't bounce when we write it. And part of the market value, part of these transactions that didn't really happen but you have to book, affect the net income number that affects the dividend. In some instances, that means that ADA is writing a check where they really didn't have revenues to write the check, and so they're using other money. On the other hand, the state could have gotten a larger dividend and should have based upon the operations, but for these unrealized losses. So one of the problems trying to fix is that. Secondly is that, and as I mentioned before, that I'm trying to fix the statutes, and I'm not trying to fix them because they were done incorrectly wrong. It's just over time, the Governmental Accounting Standard Boards have passed these changes to what is required to do an audited financial statement and basically trying to get the statutes to be more current with authoritative guidance is really what's kind of going on. But it keeps happening, and as I've shared with some of you, and you'll see in a couple of slides, GASB 75 is already on the books, becomes effective in 2018. It's not part of the current audit, but it will be part of it. And I don't know what's going to happen after that, but I'm sure there'll be more. So the short of it gets to be in this third bullet is the GAAP-based income is really derived from the results of operations plus these market value adjusting entries. And ADA's net income, as I've showed you in a couple of charts, and it'll be in here again today, is that when that income swings, the dividend swings. And sometimes it's quite material, and we want to take that out of the calculation and the payment. So just so that you know, I wasn't making any of this stuff up. Here's the actual technical names for these GAAP-compliant, GASB 31, 68, 72, 75. This is a formal name. It actually has, at the very end of each one of those, the implementation date. So 31's been in place, 68 just became effective, 72 is going to happen at the end of the current fiscal year, and then GASB 75, which is the OPEB, other post-employment benefits. It's the other side of, under the PERS and TERS, right, you have really the pension component, and then you have the health care component, and maybe you have disability. Those are the OPEB. So for whatever reason, the Governmental Accounting Standard Board decided when they talked about the unfunded liability and putting it on the books and records of these entities, they split PERS, they split TERS basically into the pension piece and then the OPEB piece, right? So the current year, we've dealt with the pension component, and not painlessly, might I add. And in future, the OPEB, the other piece, is going to end up showing up, and it will be in the financial statements. So these really do exist, and the list is just sort of growing. So the analogy, and slide, thank you, Gene, 11. This is, and I had mentioned, this is the 2015 1040. Everybody in this room will end up filling one of these out. And essentially, we're all cash-based taxpayers. That's what the federal system really is. And based upon the results of this, and as I said to some of you, is whatever your income is and expenses are to the federal government, then they say, here's the tax rates, send us a bill, ADA, whatever the audit says, adjustments for the net income, and then we pay a dividend 25 to 50% on that. So I grabbed the center section, the income section, mocked it up as though the same thing happens. You have the basic income during the year. I mentioned it's $100,000 income. You have a $250,000 portfolio, lines 8 and lines 9. You just hypothetically earn 3%. So that's $7,500. Add a permanent fund on line 21. And in theory, your actual results of the investments you hold and the permanent fund, your job, you have $109,000 of income. If you and I, if the federal government took the same as relates to our the 1040 and as relates to what we would pay taxes on, went down the same path that Government Accounting Standard Board did with what happens, the value of the change in the value of the assets you own becomes a taxable event, like it becomes a dividend event, then here's what would happen. So the first thing, this is the cover page to GASB statement number 31, accounting for investments, et cetera. If you did that on a personal level, then your tax return would look like this as it is right now. And this becomes, through the chair, to Representative Josephson, this becomes the it didn't really happen actual example. So,
Representative Ledoux, but before you start, I'd like to acknowledge that we've been joined by Representative Culver. Representative Ledoux.
So when you came by the other day, I totally understood what you were talking about. And I still think I understand what you're talking about. But I guess I'm curious because it seems to make so much sense what you're saying, that you really only have income of $109,000 rather than this $134,000. Why have these generally accepted governmental, why have these GASB standards, what's the purpose of them? Why is the government or why are the feds asking anybody to do it that way? Do you have any idea?
Yep. Through the chair to Representative. And I was telling, I think Representative Tilton this morning, that specifically GASB 31 actually goes back probably 20 plus years to, and I don't know if anyone here remembers, in Orange County, it would have been in the early 90s. Orange County actually invested the money for a lot of the cities down there. So it just they pooled it, right? And interestingly, the year before, the finance, the treasurer for Orange County actually won the California award for the best returns. The market actually turned. And so the assets that he had been investing in lost their liquidity. Basically, they were underwater because
they bought junk bonds. Excuse me, through the chair, they bought junk bonds or something like that, right?
Actually, probably that has a specific definition, and so I want to say no, and I'll tell you why my answer to that is no, is that the short of it gets to be is that when you invest at a government level, so I'm responsible for the investments, always safety first, liquidity, and yield, right? You don't want to lose the principal. That's really bad form. It's really bad form, too, that even if you don't lose the principal, if you don't have the liquidity to cover the checks when people write them, that's troublesome. And the last thing is for the type of an investment, which sort of gets to your question of whether they're junk bonds or not, which I kind of doubt any of them would have been, but is the yield. So whatever the market yield is. It's kind of like what happened in 2008-09. The market just really crashed and went a different direction. He was buying investments that were going in one way. The market was going the other way. When he went to sell them, they were technically worth less money. And so he had a liquidity problem. That liquidity problem across all of these different communities, so there's a lot of people that ended up being impacted by the same thing, they essentially didn't have the cash, and it was to the tune of $4 billion. Now,
a familiar figure.
It's a big figure, and the interesting thing about what happened is whoever ended up buying those corporate papers, the securities, the marketable securities, they bought them at a discount because of the interest rates. But when they went to sell them, this is what I understand this is the case, which makes it really interesting, is that not one of those securities defaulted. And so he made some bets, and the market went the different direction, got into liquidity problems, ended up having to liquidate a lot of these marketable securities, liquidated them at a loss, And so everybody shared in this loss. And so getting back, sorry, to your question about why do they do this, so you have all of these government agencies and you have the Government Accounting Standard Board to say, well, how would anybody have known that what is the current market value of these securities? So what they do, through the chair, to Representative Olson, is what GASB 31 did after Orange County was they said, okay, what we're going to do is on the day, the last day of the fiscal year, the day of the financial statements, you have to actually go out and act like you sold all of your securities, and you would know then whether are they worth more or are they worth less. And if you're in a pool and somebody's managing your money for you, you would know whether or not the assets they were holding, if they sold them, if they would be worth more or be worth less, which means the liquidity issue, right? So
just follow up here.
Follow.
So why couldn't, I mean, I follow what you're saying here. Wouldn't those things have shown up in some sort of a financial statement?
Well, so this is the interesting thing is that, good questions, by the way. When I said there's three types of categories of really of transactions, there's real transactions, you really buy and sell. Most everything that is in a financial statement is historic based, and there's a reason for that, because that's what really happened. Then there's the question of, well, is the historic base really reflective? And so the financial statements would know what actually did and didn't happen. But if you're holding, essentially, in this instance, billions of dollars worth of investments, and you didn't do a transaction, you don't really know whether you would make more or less on it. So what they do, this gets to your question of, well, what does it mean that you would, something happen that, as I said it, you act like something happened that didn't happen. And so what GASB 31 does with these marketable securities on the date of the financial statements, which is only one day of the year, it's at the closing price of that day, is they say, act like you sold your whole portfolio of marketable securities, and then you either have an unrealized gain or loss. And the concept, the idea is, if that would have been in place pre-Orange County, you would know what kind of investments, because you would actually have ended up with an unrealized loss on the books, and somebody should have been looking at the type of investment paper that was being bought. So just made a bet. The market went a different direction, had a liquidity problem. And so this is a financial statement way to try to maybe head that off. It really truly depends upon timing of when you do or don't need the cash. So in this instance, the short of it, I guess, to be is that particular finance, that treasurer for Orange County, forgot the safety, liquidity, and yield and started chasing yield. Market turned, needed liquidity, had to sell the marketable securities, which were good securities. None of them defaulted. They just didn't hold them to maturity and less cash. Is that good for you?
Yeah, it is. Thank you very much.
So, Representative Josephson, does that kind of help when I say that's exactly what happens with that third category, these market value adjustments, is you act like, what would the financial statements look like if you actually had a transaction on this date? It's just that the number of those transactions now have gone from marketable securities only, GASB 31, to now we have the pension component, GASB 68, the GASB 72, and then eventually GASB 75. So are we?
Representative Kito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think I'm thinking back to, you had mentioned it kind of triggered a question for me. When you are looking at your statutes that indicate a dividend can be paid of between 25 and 50% of your available, my thinking is you actually have flexibility within that 25 to 50% to levelize the payment going to the state. So it seems like there is flexibility right now to accommodate for some of those other items that have to be accounted for under the GASB accounting rules. What I'm thinking of, I guess, is if you have $100 of earnings and you are deciding to pay $30 of those earnings to the state of Alaska, but behind those earnings in your actual investment account, maybe you've got $100 million, but you're carrying a liability of something like $50 million, which significantly impedes the ability of that fund to raise future revenue, and then that liability ends up being realized the following year, then you've paid out a higher dividend than practically you should have been able to afford because you do have an actual loss that comes in and has to be paid for. So I'm a little worried that by doing this where we may be leveling it out, but it seems to me like you already have the ability within statute to level the payment because of your flexibility between 25 and 50%. And then it does seem that you would have an overall trend, and I guess what I'm not seeing is what the overall trend ends up being. Does this change result in more money coming to the state over a longer period of time or less money or the same amount? And if it's the same amount, then it doesn't appear as though those dividends vary significantly year to year. Some of them, I guess, 10 to 17, fairly significant, but it's still a very small amount of money when we're considering billions of dollars in debt. So I guess I'm not quite sure why this is necessary and what it is actually trying to accomplish.
So through the chair, Representative Keto, I think you said probably about, well, at least three things. You are correct that the board, which sets the dividend of between the 25 and 50%, they do have some flexibility. The historical trend, when you go back and look, has almost always been the 50%. There's a few years it's been slightly different, and the current year has been slightly different. Part of it which makes it difficult is looking out into the future and asking the question, is the dividend that we're setting going to be a problem or not for us? And so in the current year, actually looking at the capacity model, we looked at that, and we have investment policies actually done through investment resolution that say, for example, in the consideration of that, the operating, we're supposed to have 2 years of operating cash available, liquid. I mean, so there's these parameters out there, and so everything you put forth is part of, and I said thank you earlier today, and I meant it, that as the CFO, my job is to be partially risk-averse, and actually quite a bit risk-averse. It's government money, it's public money, and all of those reasons. And some of the stuff that you're talking about is technically, yes, I agree, as a practical matter to look out into the future and say what will and won't happen is very difficult, especially related to market adjustments to marketable securities. The question is, another point is, well, do they even out? And if you kept everything on a linear basis, do the unrealized gains and losses year over year in the end net themselves out? It's a question that we've thought about. It's like, well, okay, part of this is, yes, getting rid of those swings, but another component is actually having the cash available to pay the dividends when they're due versus a dividend is due and you maybe don't have the cash from results of operation. Likewise, you could have paid it. So there is very much the issue of linking the payment to the cash available sitting in your bank. But the thing that kind of I have not come up with an answer to is that the biggest majority of our marketable securities are externally managed. And those, we go through an RFP process, we have an outside third-party look at what's going on. I'm actually that process right now. But they are constantly, and I don't mean like all the time, but they turn the portfolios over a couple of times a year. So there's this constant buying and selling. So unlike when I used to be at the Fairbanks North Star Bureau and I would buy investments, I would buy them. I never worried about the quality of the paper safety because our ordinances said here's what you can buy, which generally were Treasury, GSEs, government-sponsored enterprise. I mean, things, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, I mean, things that would be good, you know, you'd get your money back. It was always an issue of when did I need that cash back to write checks, right, liquidity purposes. So I never churned. I always bought and held to maturity because I bought for liquidity purposes. The outside external money managers buy and sell, and so it's not linear because there's really no control. We don't really have control over. They're trying to meet a benchmark. They actually operate differently. And so this question, the basic question of in the end does it even out, I don't know the answer to that. And in fact, when there was a changeover in one of the external managers, they sold a lot of the portfolio. And there was actually to, because they wanted different types of investments and there were losses. And so that will never level itself out. And I just, it'd be great to give you a yes or no question, or yes or no answer to your question. But I think that in the end, it doesn't just level itself out because unlike when I used to buy and hold, in the end, under that scenario, it would level itself out. We're not in a buy and hold scenario. So it seems like there was another
follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that was pretty much it. I guess what I'm concerned about is that by making this change, are we substantially changing the way that we're going to be receiving dividends at the state of Alaska? And if we're receiving a varied number, is that varied number over a period of time going to be more or less? I mean, it seems like if there were going to be no change, there wouldn't be real motivation to do it. We just deal with the volatility, which we have to deal with in terms of the market in some respects anyway. But if we're thinking that we might end up getting more in a dividend to the state, I'm worried about putting too much pressure on ADA investments by returning too high of a dividend over the long period and putting a pressure on the liquid cash. So I don't know that there's really an answer to it, but it's just an out there question that I don't really. It's important to me, but I don't really know how to get to it.
So. Through the chair, Representative, you know, this is maybe going to sound a little funny, or I hope it doesn't sound bad. It's not intended to sound bad. But this isn't coming here and testifying and trying to change state law isn't really something that turns my, you know, makes me feel good or excited. But doing this as the CFO for ADA, looking at the dividend, looking at the swings, and I happened to come in a year where there was a huge swing, and I was asked, you need to explain this. It's like the right thing to do to sort of stabilize it is to really make these changes, to get them caught up with the government accounting standard boards. I have no idea what other mark-to-market things. I just don't know. So to be able to tell you that if you pass this, what it's going to mean in the future in terms of is the state better off or is ADA better off, I honestly don't know the answer to that because every year that answer could actually be different. And I don't know if in the end, whenever the end is, but I look at the relationship hopefully between ADA and the state and the state's role as being perpetual, which means we should keep going. And next year there'll be another dividend calculation, the year after that another one, the year after that another one. And when I talked about that there were two problems, and this just deals with the market value, the other problem that I want to try to fix in the statutory language is when we invest in projects. That's a pretty clear-cut deal to me that neither ADA nor the state should end up paying sort of a dividend penalty when they're investing in a project. So the market one on the long term, I kind of don't know. All I can tell you is I, as the CFO, think it's the right, fair thing to do, and it sort of gets back to probably where the dividend calculation started, was share in your results of operations with the state. You know, we have, like the feds do employment and inflation competing. we have employment and trying to find long-term investment so there's economic activity. And by the way, and in doing that, we also need to be self-sustaining and we also need to pay a dividend. That's kind of tough. So this just helps stabilize that whole thing. So
thank you.
Representative Hughes, followed by Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here, Michael. The question you just answered is talking about in the future, if we were to make these changes, you really can't say. Have you looked back, and if these changes would have been applied, I'm looking on slide 3, the very dividends, if you would, have you done the calculations to see what the total would have been through those years if this if these changes would have been in effect, because that might let us know where we might be in 20 years.
Through the chair, the answer is no, because to some respects, in my mind, it didn't make a difference. And depending upon how big of a swing what's going on in the market, maybe it's material or not material. In the last few years, especially where you see these huge, dramatic, draconian swings, it's kind of like it's there, you can't avoid it. And the problem also gets to be, and I understand what you're saying, and it would seem like, wouldn't it make sense you would just go back and see what would have happened if you know, add the two columns, gains and losses. Well, maybe it turned out to be exactly neutral. But you still have the problem of writing checks when you maybe didn't have the cash or as much cash as you could have, and you could have used those for other loans, you could have used them for projects, but instead you wrote a dividend. On the other hand, you should have wrote a check to the state, and you didn't. And so, to me, it's more an issue of, okay, we want to take the swings out. They seem to be more volatile, one. Two is that what I really do not know, and we're talking huge dollars, are the impacts of GASB 68 with the pension obligation. GASB 72, we still haven't quite put our arms around what that's going to mean. And so it's like, well, maybe we could have just lived with 31 and just deal with it and write checks or don't write checks bigger or smaller. But what about these other impacts? Should they really be part of the calculation for the dividend? And so the timing of it is such that we really should just sort of fix this. Because I honestly, yes, I could go back and calculate what happened with 31, which would have nothing to do technically. You could say, well, maybe it smooths itself out. But I really have a lot of concern when you're talking about PERS pension and our component of, which is the billions of dollars, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know.
Hello?
And just help me. So if we didn't change it and these new GASB rules went into effect, would the result be smaller dividends to the state, or would you be writing bigger dividends and would be difficult for you to be writing based on what you really had? Oh. So, I mean, it's because, okay, and follow up?
Yeah.
Looking back at the 20 years, and you didn't do that, I don't know what that would be involved. That would be very interesting, and I know the rules probably changed during those 20 years too, so that would have affected things. I'm thinking about the next 20 years. You know, I have children and grandchildren. But then I'm also thinking, oh, we have this pesky fiscal gap here. What in the next 5 years, and I know you don't know exactly what the markets are going to do and everything, but just is it going to be better? Is the state going to get larger dividends if we fix this now, do you predict? Or just talk about the best you can what you would think in the next 5 years.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes. First of all, both, could they be bigger? Yes. Could they be smaller? Yes. I have no idea what the impacts of 68, 72, and 75 are going to be in something else. And so I don't know what direction. If I had to do my standard $1 bragging bet, never bet very much money, just the dollar, I would bet that for year ending 6/30/16, and I would bet no more than $1 on it, I think if the market conditions continue the way they are, that we'll end up having at least a GASB 31 mark-to-market unrealized loss, which effectively means a reduced dividend to the state without a change. Certainly not going to guess out beyond, what are we at, four and a half months from now, where the markets could be and what's going on in the world. But right now, the rates are actually coming up, which means theoretically all the securities that we hold right now, if we sold them, should be worth slightly less, which would mean we would have an unrealized loss. So I'm willing to bet $1 that 6/30 of 16, when the audited financial statements come out, that we'll have an unrealized loss from GASB 31. If you asked me about 2017, I wouldn't even, it would be irresponsible to even say that I had a clue.
Follow up. And so just for the year that you're comfortable with your $1 bet, how many millions of dollars of difference would it make in the dividend if we did this or didn't do this?
Could I come back to answering that question when I get to a slide? There's actually a slide in here that I didn't share with you, but I think it's interesting. That may help with my reluctance to tell you what that is, but you could see I think history is a great teacher, too. In this instance, I'm more concerned about 31, 68, 72, 75, not just 31. So that's why it's like, well, I can go crunch the numbers, but it really is not a predictor of what's going to happen with all these other things. And you're exactly right when you say the dividend could be smaller one year, yes. And when you say the dividend could be bigger one year, you're right. You're right in both instances.
Mm-hmm. Representative Ledoux.
So I was just thinking about something. When you were talking about the Orange County controller or whatever he was
Treasurer.
So, and the reason that was the reason why the government initiated those standards. So, ADA is not a public entity. I mean, it's owned by the state. So, without using GASB, how do we know that the same thing might not be happening? I mean, I'm going to take your word for it that you're a very careful person. But suppose somebody goes in there that's following yields more than they're following safety. How are we looking at the 1040s or whatever it is that you file? How are we going to know that if you don't follow GASB?
The chair. If you remember the slide that had the statute, here's the statutory language that says you have to have an audit. The audit has to be GAAP. In order to be GAAP, it has to be GASB. In order to get an audit, in order to have an audited financial statement, you have to have a certified public accountant opine, which is the only part of a financial statement they technically own is their opinion at the very beginning that says we find these financial statements to be materially correct in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So as relates to the financial statements, if they're truly audited and they're signed off and they have a clean opinion, you should have some comfort that an independent third party has looked at that very deal, because part of what we do as management, quote unquote, who's responsible for financial statements, we are making a representation that the value that we show for all the assets we have on the balance sheet is true and correct as the liabilities are. The auditors come in behind. They go look essentially at third-party validation. So they look at the documentation that came from KeyBank. They look at Cowen's documentation. I mean, so they look at outside documentation to validate to what we've said and what we're making represent is correct. And so I think as long as, which is probably why it's in the statutes, that you have an audit, which has a really, actually to our profession, has a pretty specific meaning, you should feel comfortable.
Follow-up. So didn't any of these Orange County entities, weren't any of them audited?
The at sorry, through the chair, Representative Ledoux. At the time, GASB Statement Number 31 was not in effect. And so I go back to what I had said earlier, and I'm sorry this is all accounting stuff, but at the time, only when that treasurer actually liquidated one of his holdings would you know that you had a gain or a loss. Now, that's why it goes back to the you have to act like you sold all of those things, and then at least as of the financial statement date, you know whether or not you would have had a gain or loss if you liquidated for cash.
Representative Ledoux.
So what you're telling me, I think, is that as far as the income tax statement, you wouldn't use GASB 31. But as far as the actual financial statement, that you would continue to use it. Is that what
right.
I'm hearing?
Right.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think you've just restated your question absolutely correct. This is Gene Theriault. For purposes of the audited financial statement, ADA will continue to apply mm-hmm. all of the GAAP and GASB rules. But you as policymakers get to determine then what is the dividend paid to the state going to be based on? And the suggestion is that these changes, these market evaluations, really for sort of a snapshot at time on, you know, the suggestion that you pretending like you sold your portfolio when you really didn't, that those things will be backed out before the dividend is actually calculated. But ADA will still follow all of the appropriate accounting rules to get a financial audited statement.
Thank you. That clarifies it.
Representative Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That begs the question then, why was it ever, this requirement ever included originally? What was the thinking?
Through the Chair, Representative Hughes, the GASB Statement 31 wasn't in existence at the time, and that's why, mm-hmm. you know, I tried to say, try to be polite. There's really nothing wrong with statutory language when it was written. But in that time period, and I showed you four, mm-hmm. and I actually put the dates on there for kind of a reason, too, is that 31 has been in place, which on that one chart mm-hmm. actually goes back. You can see when it started. The dividend started before that. GASB 31 came, and then you start seeing these changes. Well, since then, they've added three more market value adjusting, and it's like, well, we should fix this. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, through Chair to Representative Ledoux, and thank you, Gene, the reality is what you're trying to accomplish and measure and report on as relates to an audited financial statement is a question. And I think, as Gene would say, and what's in my mind, what ADA should share to the state in the form of a dividend is really a different question. Mm-hmm. But to get to this dividend question, you have to answer this one, and then it's like, well, should you change, you need to sort of modify that to get really to a fair sharing, which is really, again, what I had said earlier. It's like, I'm just an accountant, I do debits and credits, and what's sort of the right thing, and the authoritative guidance has changed, and we should get to really probably what I would interpret the original count was, is share some of the income with the state. And
Representative Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to, I look back on slide 10, the date for GASB 31 isn't on there. It is for the others, so just might want to get that updated.
We can do that. If you look at the the chart that shows the green that has the pre-GASB 31, and then you can actually see where the yellow, the modified number is, that would be the year. But I'm happy to get that.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure what chart you're talking about.
Should I keep skipping through and then I'll point it out to you? Would that be okay, Representative?
Yeah, if we haven't come to it yet, I was just looking back. I didn't see it, Mr. Chair.
Not come to it yet.
Oh, okay, that's fine. Keep going.
Okay.
Mr. Lamb, you were on our board for a number of years, weren't you?
I was never on the ARM board. but I spent a lot of time working on the PERS issue.
Then this would be a challenge that the ARM board is probably having to come to grips to then with the edge.
Mr. Chair, good for you. The interesting thing about the balance sheet for the retirement fund is that most of the assets are investment securities, which means they have to be adjusted for mark to market. So you have on the asset side, you have an adjustment driven by GASB 31. On the liability side, the liability is actually driven by the actuarial estimates using all the different methodologies. So in this instance, you actually have a balance sheet that has estimated liabilities based upon actuarial determinations, depending on what methodology they used. And then every year at year end, you have all of the assets, a lot of marketable securities that are to pay that get revalued. And the result of that is partly GASB 67 is where the plan itself has to have its books and records adjusted. And then GASB 68, as I explained to Gene, so if something happens to me, I go on exotic vacation, Gene can come and answer all these questions. But once the plan has its balance sheet, then GASB 68 then says, now all the plan members, you need to have a share of what the plan's liability is, right? And the net, and that net is driven by exactly what's the value of the assets, what's the value of the liabilities, or what are the unfunded. It's kind of a quagmire, which sort of gets to what am I willing to bet on? Not much, other than it will have an effect.
I've been a bit remiss. Mr. Springsteen's been on the hooked up, so if you need a lifeline, he is available at some point in time.
Mr. Chairman, I think getting way back to Representative Josephson's question about, well, what do you mean by these things that didn't really happen? Michael has gone over the first one, GASB 31. He's got three other examples that add, you know, sort of phantom transactions to this supposed tax page. And then we've got a graph that the vice chair asked about that sort of shows then how it starts to impact the fluctuations. So
I can just go through this really quick because, I mean, I think you get the essence of it. So I'm on slide 14. Are we good to go? Mm-hmm. Okay, so here you could see, actually, you went from 109 and you add the 25, you're at 134. Going on to slide 15, this is GASB 68. This has to do with the pension component. Going on to slide 16, so if you take where we were at and then you add in, let's just say I threw in personalized it, GASB 68 for ADA, personal level I said, well, your 401 or your IRAs or whatever, you had a 5%, here's another 10,000, so your $134,000 now goes to $144,000 of taxable income. Going on to slide 17, here's GASB 72, so you can see what that cover of that particular statement looks like. And if you personalize this from ADA doing a GASB 72 and you set it on your personal tax return, if the federal government said, by the way, we want you now to include fair value for your rental property went up, and I said, assume 400,000, 5%, I'm on slide 18, that's another 20,000, so all of a sudden our 144 goes to $164,000, that you go, oh my, I have to pay taxes on 164, even though I only had 109 and I got disposable. Then the last one that I know about as of right now, GASB statement number 75, which is slide 19. Come over to slide 20. It's like, okay, here's the actual stuff, plus I threw three of these examples in, and now I throw GASB 75, and I, quite frankly, these are the OPEB. This is the, so if you take PERS and TERS and you have the pension component and then you have all the other benefits that are in there, disability, for example, health care, all of those are considered other pension obligation, OPEBs. So I just threw $5,000 in there because I'm not sure what a really good analogy. This one's kind of a hard one for me, and I didn't have an epiphany that satisfied me, so I just threw $5,000 in there. But you go from 164 to 169. So now all of a sudden, on slide 20, where you started at 109, if you and I as individuals had to report to the federal government the increase in the value of the assets we own, even though we didn't sell any of them, right? But you have to show it on here, and you have to get these values, then all of a sudden we're paying taxes on that amount. And as I said when we had met individually, any of these, to your question earlier, could go in either any direction. So where you end up, who knows? So I want to take that out of the dividend. Again, there's the audited piece, and then what should the dividend be based on? The dividend, I don't think, should be based on these non-cash transactions. That's why I'm here. So let's see. So here's the chart we talked about, Representative Hughes, and slide 21. You can see about 1997, the green line is the net income audited, Representative Ledoux. So there's the audited number, and then I said, okay, basically what I did is I took the audited numbers, I backed out the GASB 31, created the green line, and then when GASB 31 came into play, looks like the first year must have, looks like fiscal year 98 would have been the first year that it was applicable. And so essentially what happened in that year is the income, when you look at it, went from about $45 million in net income, actual activity, right? You throw GASB 31, the mark to market, and now the income looks like from here about $52-ish million. That's what happened. And so when you do the dividend's not based upon the $45 million times 25 or 50%. The dividend would be based on 25 to 50% of $52 million. So here's an example of, so you're paying, writing a check out based upon revenues that you really didn't get. You act like you got them because you have to book it. So the question is, and what we're trying to get to, if you go from the audit to, I think we should take those things out and pay a dividend based upon the green line. That's where we're at. And to Representative Hughes, of course, your question gets to be is if I took all of the areas above the green and below and I added those up, where would I be? I don't know what I don't know. Looks like from here that maybe the state's gotten more than it should have, but then in some of the years it's dropped a lot too. And, you know, my $1 bet says that when 16 is up there, that the yellow line is below the green line. And did you want some of that? Can you do that here? Actually, do a better. So this is a slide, and then what I added and I've talked to you about is, so all the areas above the green line is where there are revenues that GASB 31 says you have to record that the dividend's based on, which is essentially write a dividend for more than you maybe have earned. Some of the years not so big. Some of the years is quite a bit bigger. Look at 2010. There's a big difference in from $40 million to almost just under $60 million. That's a huge and then on the flip of it is all these ones on the bottom are where, you know, as the example showed, if we would have actually made the money, we could have paid more of a dividend. But all of these areas are where the state got less of a dividend because the net income got dropped by the unrealized losses that didn't happen, but you had to show them. So here's a chart. I thought I would include it. Sorry, thank you, Jean. Slide 22, ma'am. I'm trying. So this is a chart we actually created for the board for the current dividend. And it looks kind of busy, but it's actually 2012, 2013, and then the difference between those two is, which is the variance. Then you have 2014's actual and the variance, and then you have 2015 and the variance. And the reason I brought this in is I think it's a good, it explains even better, and it gets to Representative Hughes sort of the question you had a little bit earlier. And I said, if you take these green areas, the operating revenues and operating expenses. If you look at the operating revenues 2012 through 15, they're fairly stable, 61.8 million, 61.6 million, 57.9 million, almost 58 million, 57 million. And if you look at expenses, 27 to 30.7 to 28. Those don't have very much volatility. They're fairly stable, which in theory, if that's what the dividend was being based on, you have a pretty good predictor of the future. It doesn't have these swings, right? Now watch this little, how cool is this, right? This gets to your question. Sorry, I shouldn't get excited about this stuff. But so there's your unrealized gain or losses. This is GASB 31 mark-to-market. Look at, in 2012, there was actually an unrealized gain of $7.14 million. 1 year later, there was an unrealized loss of almost $22 million. So there's a swing in the income directly related to the mark-to-market of $29 million is the variance in those 2 years. And then when you go to 2014, you have a $4.6 million actual gain. And so if you look at the difference in the $22 million unrealized loss that you had to book and record, you acted like you sold your securities. If you had sold them, you would have had a $22 million loss. 2014, if you sold your securities, you would have had almost $4.6 million gain. So there's a $26 million swing from the prior year. And then in the next year, you see go to 2015, you go from $4.6 million gain to a 3.3, so that's only an $8 million swing. So what we're proposing, and again to Representative Duke, all this stuff is still being audited financial statements. It would still go to the board. We would still look at what's going on. I mean, I look at it real closely because I'm sort of responsible for this. But we're just saying for the dividend, we think that we shouldn't include these. And here's basically, so the analogy that I brought forth, it says this is your salary and, you know, you made some money on your portfolio, your marketable. And what HB 268 and Senate Bill 149 really does is take out those things, act like you don't have to do them. Does that plain, simple, straightforward, easy?
So, Mr. Chairman, so when I first had Michael explain this to me and try to put myself in the position of what information you'd be looking for and what policy questions does the legislation tee up for you, it basically is, do you want the ADA dividend to be based on real cash transactions, or do you want them to be that number to be swung by these paper transactions? And the suggestion and the outcome solution for this first problem is that those things would just be backed out, still would all be followed for the GASB compliance, GAAP compliance, but when it came time for calculation of the actual dividend, those non-cash things would be backed out.
Representative Hughes.
Just wondering, is the ADA board, did you bring this to the ADA board, and the ADA board is behind this? And when did that occur? How long has this conversation been going on?
If I may, through the chair, first on my slide 23, ma'am, I don't think I said that, so I want to remedy that. Secondly, through the chair, Representative Hughes, and I was telling Gene earlier today that how this came about, and I think I had mentioned to you, is that in doing the fiscal year 2015 audit, talking with the controller, and we're talking about this stuff, it's in the fall of sometime, maybe July, somewhere in there, I brought to the ADA, first to the executive director, and then to the ADA board to go, well, the legislative session is starting pretty soon, and we actually have to submit by September, somewhere, it's pretty early, what legislative statutory changes that we want to do. So mid, late this summer sometime, which is when they created that one I just showed you, the yellow and the swings, it's like, we really should probably fix this. So the short answer is, it really had to do with working on the audit for 2015 that just got completed. It had to do with this, and said, well, let's take it to the board, and I will try to explain to them why I think we need to fix it. So, yes, the board is aware of it. The board does support doing this, and I think that, as I tried to say and state in the goal, ADA has a real important mission of the employment and financing, but at the same time, you know, it would be great if we generated even more income, isn't it? It's always nice to say, wouldn't it be great to make more money? But we are self-sustaining, and we do think that paying the dividend and being stable and predictable, which is important when we go to the rating agencies for bonds and financing, it's all important. And so the board absolutely is in support of, sorry for this sounds like a trite statement, but it's really the right thing to do. I mean, it's a fair thing to do, and so the board, yes, is in support of this. And if it wasn't for the board in support of it, it wouldn't be here. I mean,
thank you.
We good?
We better go on.
We better get going. Sorry, I will speed my pace up. So, Problem one. Problem two is the what I label the dividend penalty, the adjusting entry. To me, this one's a little bit more complex, but try to explain it as best I can. There's the dividend penalty, an effect of adjusting entries. If you look at that chart that shows the green and you show the yellow, this is the same type of a deal that you end up with more or less net income, which the dividend is based on. And then depending upon what the circumstances, that may or may not affect the dividend. And it doesn't happen frequently at all. But, again, as the fact of the matter, as I told Gene a few hours ago, is that the discussions we had this year brought up this issue, the controller and I said, well, you know, if we're going to try to fix the market value stuff, we should address this one too, so that when it does come, the dividend is really calculated fairly, if you will. So, and I'm on slide 25. So with this one, it says when the value of a project, so when ADA is given money, get cash, we are working on a project, because that's really what we're talking about here, are projects. We take the cash and we create the CWIP. You know, we're constructing an asset, so we keep track of it. And for whatever reason, it doesn't sort of kind of matter, but for whatever reason, the determination gets made is that we're going to stop working on that project. There's no future value, because one of the things I said in the letter of representations is, have we fairly stated, have we done any write-downs that are supposed to be done? We have to sign our names, and I actually am a CPA. I'm a licensed and registered CPA, and when I sign my name to that stuff, it sort of matters. I mean, it's there's some professional liability that goes with that. So we want to do the right thing, and sort of need to do the right thing. And so if we have any of these projects, the effect to take it off the balance sheet, it goes through the income statement, which then affects net income. And then in the end, what I put the third, it possibly, depending on the circumstances, could have a dividend penalty effect too. And so this slide is, I said, potential effects of an adjustment to a state-funded investment project. And as Gene pointed out one time, it could actually be a federal project. It's the same. The very top part of this, the computation statutory, and I'm on slide 26. The very top of this, the $27 million down to the $25 million, is actually comes right out of audited financial statements back in, Section 7 at the end of the, Schedule 7, I think it is, at the end of the audited financial statements. So I said, okay, let's do this hypothetical in 2015. This didn't happen, but it could happen, is that if we had sitting on our books a project that had been funded by the state, it's worth $8.5 million, and if for some reason there's no future value and we go, okay, we have to write that down, goes to the income statement, all of a sudden the net income goes from the $25.3 million you see up there down to the $16.508, that $8.8 million. And if you apply the 50% dividend to that, that's a $4.4 million reduction in the dividend. So the effect is where the state, the legislative, you folks go, we think we want to do this, it makes sense to do it, here's $8.8 million, we do as asked, and then for whatever reason that project gets stopped, and if the circumstances are right, and you apply the dividend gets reduced, so the cost really for the state going, we think we should do this, went from $8.8 million to essentially $13.2 million in real cash, because the state wrote a check for $8 million, and then the dividend actually got reduced by $4.84 million, where we would have sent that money to the state. So, ma'am?
Representative Ledoux.
So, has this 8.8 that you've now taken off the balance sheet, did that ever go on the balance sheet as an asset of 8.8?
That's exactly what it is, sitting as an asset. The essence of it gets to be is, accounting is really pretty easy. It always really has to do with conversion of to or from cash. And ADA received $8.8 million to spend on to invest in a project. It was an expense, so you took cash and you essentially converted it to an asset, to a different type of an asset, right, a project. So you put money into to doing studies, to doing EIS, to doing engineering, something that you think that you're going to use to build a project with. So you keep it on the books, on the balance sheet, as it has future value, right? It'd be like if you were an individual and you decided you wanted to build a new home and you went and paid an architect, say, $10,000 for some house plans that you were going to build. And at some point that you decide, I'm not going to build that house and I can't sell the plans, they're not really worth anything, where you would have kept track of that, maybe that $10,000, you go, well, there really is no future value, comes off. And so it's kind of the same thing here, that you could invest, take cash, be building an asset, and then for whatever reason decide you're not, and then it is on the balance sheet, it has to be taken off, and it goes through the income statement. And I know there's a question.
Follow up?
So maybe I'm not understanding things here, but if you put it on the balance sheet as an asset and then it turns out not to be an asset, then wouldn't it make sense to write it off? I mean, and put it down as a loss, because now it is a loss.
You absolutely, you do have to do that. The question gets to be, so yes, you're, sorry, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you have it exactly right. That is what should happen. But in doing that, the next question gets to be is, does that affect the dividend? So if the state put up the $8.8 million, used ADA to build this asset, it goes away, goes down to the income statement, then as we show here, where the statutory net income was $25.3 million, and then we go, well, there's no future value to this asset. Our statutory defined net income as it is right now under the right circumstances becomes 16.5. So exactly as you said, it should go off the balance sheet. It should go through the income statement. We're simply saying that that wasn't ADA's revolving fund money that was invested in this asset. It was money that came from the state. The state said, do this for us. We did it. And it could have been federal money that came in. We write it down. It reduces the net income. The effect of that, when you apply just a straight 50% dividend rate to it, is a reduced dividend to the state. And so ADA itself didn't use any of its revolving, any of its normal operating money. And so this is a case of like, wow, this could happen, and it doesn't seem quite right that the state would pay for a project. Has no future value. You do the write down through the income statement, lowers the net income, which lowers the dividend to the state. This is one of those ones, and the language is such that you would, just like the market value, you would say, this shouldn't be part of the dividend calculation.
Follow up?
What was the, when you first got the $8 million from the state, was that part of the dividend calculation?
It actually gets removed. There's the current language, which is in the first part of it, actually says capital appropriations or whatever, so it comes back out of it. So otherwise, what would happen is the state would give us money, it would show up as a revenue, and then we have to give you 25 to 50% of it back, so you wouldn't have money to do the project, so it comes out. What's missing is the other side of that, is like, well, again,
I got you.
We good?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I think the real salient part is that it was a source of money outside of ADA's revenue stream, normal revenue stream. It was a state appropriation of GF money to ADA. for something, or it was a federal grant that Ada was in receipt of, and if the project does not go forward, it's written off. Should that transaction impact the dividend that comes from Ada's normal operations, basically? And the suggestion is that no, those were funds that were outside the normal course of Ada's utilization of its income stream, and so it should not impact the calculation of the dividend.
Are we good?
I think we're good.
I will pick up because, sorry. Slide 27. So I just did a representation which I've shared with you, is that here's the same chart. I grabbed this piece of it, and all I tried to show on here is that pre-GASB 31, the green line, you were about $28 million, the $25 million after GASB 31, so there's less of income. Net income is lower, the dividend is lower, and if we had this hypothetical, this is the visual, that dot says where the net income number would have dropped down, that's reduced by the same $8.8 million, and so it ends up happening less income. Now all of a sudden you're paying a dividend on $16 million versus what I showed previously, and this is why, and it, at a 50% dividend rate, is $4.4 million, and it just, it's sort of, that's why I called it a penalty. Paid 8.8, but then the dividend got reduced. Well, that doesn't seem quite right. So we're putting fixing it. Are we good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So 27, slide 28. Here's the flip of that under current policy. This is a jack-up rig hypothetical that we had been invested about $23 million in it. If hypothetically ended up selling it for 17. It's a Section 172 project. And all of a sudden, in this instance, we got the same $25 million, but in this case, there's a $6 million loss, which gets taken out right now. You add 50% dividend, and all of a sudden, you're paying a dividend on $31.3 million. So this is the flip of the other example where it actually was revolving fund money that was used, and it just is the opposite. And so, and this, I'm just going to skip through this. It's the same set. It just turns the number the other way around, so you can see that the dividend goes in the opposite direction. The effect is the same as the market value is paying dividend when you should, and you're paying it, and you're not paying it. You could have paid more, and you should have paid more, or you're paying it when you shouldn't pay it. So the proposed statutory language changes, this is everything, so I just took this up real quick. This is the mark-to-market value, so if you look at the changes that are in there, this next piece, I'm on slide 31, this is where the AG's office wanted to define what project and development, which is why all the stuff in the middle is in there, which sort of is a catch-all. These two sections, net income means blah, 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 unrestricted net income means, all of that is exact same language in there. And so the part that kind of really matters, that the substance of what I'm asking you to do and how it gets fixed is really kind of in here. And I just added this extra slide in here that to highlight, you know, we add the mark to market, which is section 2. And under 3, when I use the kind of the gold, net income means the change in net position, right? Under GAAP, a lot of financial statements, and if you skip down to the bottom, so net income means and excludes amounts attributable to intergovernmental transfers, capital contributions. So Representative Ledoux, that was your half of the question about what happens with the revenues when we got them, right? That's where it would have excluded it, so we're not paying a dividend on the money the state gave us. And what we've done is added to that contribution grants, losses on a project development to the extent financed with state or federal grants or appropriations. That fixes the dividend penalty issue number 2. And then the language related to excluding mark-to-market value, basic accounting entries, non-cash accounting entries, retirement, that has to do essentially with GASB 31, GASB 68, GASB 72, and GASB 75. Not to put technical, but those are those pieces. So the very first part of that actually fixes problem number 2. After the mark-to-market, excludes and fixes problem number 1. Easy? Makes sense? 32. Going on. So in summary, ma'am, I'm at slide 33. Proposed statutory changes to HB 268 and 149, if I've done any kind of a job at all, I hope I have, removes the market value entries that impact the dividend, which I think will better stabilize. I mean, gets you basically to that more of the green line, and in particular going out into the future keeps it on the green line essentially. It better connects the actual payment of the dividends to actual revenue earned, which is why the, I thought the 1040 example is a good example, that you and I, if we had to write checks on increases in value that we didn't get any cash for, we would be troubled by it. So that's what this does. It removes essentially the dividend penalty. It doesn't happen very frequently, and under the right circumstances it could, so it just kind of fixes it. It's just another one of those. It's the right thing to do. And for basically, you know, besides aligning the statutory language to really, so the dividend is really more tied to the cash-based transactions, it really kind of also modernizes it, if you will, brings it current with the changes to authoritative guidance, the GASB statutes, and it's worded in such a way that we didn't use the specific stuff because I don't know what's going to happen in terms of what other market value changes that are going to come. But if it's a market value entry that really isn't a real transaction, you have to book, the dividend shouldn't be affected by it. I think that concludes my time presenting, Mr. Chair.
Actually, your timing is perfect. Several of us have a 5 o'clock meeting, but do we have any questions? Any more questions? With that, we will hold the bill over and hopefully get to public testimony sometime next week.
Thank you for time,
Mr.
Chair.
Also invited testimony. I think there will be a few people. And I think John Springsteen dropped off the line, so maybe we could possibly hear from him next week, a few words. And with that, I believe we will adjourn at about 5 minutes to 5.